Hello, and welcome to the No Good Poetry Podcast. Each week we talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of poetry.
This is episode 4.
With
Joseph Bienvenue and
Joseph Makos. This is the good, bad, and the ugly, isn't it? Some ugly shit out there, kids. Let's make the world safer for poetry.
We have two special guests this week, Mr. David Moss and Mr. Sidney Manuel. What's
happening? Of the Parking Lot Podcast.
It's about movies, guys.
You say podcast twice in your title.
We haven't gotten there yet.
we need to rehearse that.
But it's a it's where we discuss the movies right after we see them in the parking lot, as our opinions are gelling and forming.
It's very creepy and very fun.
And well, and that, the reason we have them here is we're doing a special episode this week, and we are going to
review a movie.
Yeah, we're going to review the movie Patterson, directed by Jim Jarmusch. I don't know if you say Jarmusch or Jarmusch. I hear both. I don't know what, David, what's the right pronunciation?
I just call him Big Jimmy.
Double J. I've never heard for sure myself, to be honest with you. I think Jarmusch.
I always said Jarmusch, but I definitely hear some people say Jarmusch.
I like Jarmusch. That sounds a little more special filmmaker quality. You know,
I think you're trying too hard when you say that. Sounds like a dessert.
Like I said, I call him Big Jimmy.
So, I mean, we don't get poetry-themed movies that often, so we're kind of excited about this.
Yeah.
So we're going to leave you for a moment and watch the movie, and we will be back to talk about it.
Anything chop it else up with we want to add? Our guests.
Sounds good to me, man. Let's watch this thing.
All right, so we just finished watching the movie.
Just finished it. We may have gotten soda.
Finished about 5 minutes ago.
It was quite a journey.
Now I kind of, when I tried to watch it before, it was at like 1 a.m. I would have never made it. I could have been wide awake. I would have never made it to the movie at 1 a.m. So now I've seen the whole thing.
It's a quiet, meditative movie. What did the poets think?
Yeah, let's talk to the poets. It's just the movie's about poetry.
I think it's interesting what it's saying about poetry. And I don't know what to think of the character of Patterson in some ways. He's not the most likable person in the world to me.
Not really. I don't want to just like jump ahead, but... jump ahead. Well, I don't know if it's jumping ahead, but I have this sort of instinct about that character from the beginning. And it came through in sort of the dialogue, the way that people would talk to him at the beginning. But I think that the character is actually a metaphor for the entire city, and that, like, he is, like, in a certain sense, just like this... I mean, the city is named Patterson, the character is named Patterson. I mean, is that, like, too blatant and of a thing to just come out and say, like...
Well, what do you think is the significance of that, I guess?
Well, like, the personification of the city through this, like, sort of, like, character and his exploits. So it's kind of like this everyman, you know? Like, you said he's not likable. I agree because I think that, like, he's a little bit of a chump, but he's also kind of like this intuitive, you know, quiet type, but he doesn't seem like to really stand up for himself. He doesn't seem to, you know, he sort of like just like goes with the flow. he doesn't really have like necessarily like a really like I think Jarmusch painted him as like this as this like he is multi-dimensional character, but he doesn't go beyond certain dimensions. Like he's very he's not like as rich and deep as I would kind of like want him to be.
I think he's I mean, I think it's kind of an interesting character. I don't know. Is he an everyman? I kind of see him as, in a sense he is, because he's a bus driver and he's very, like, stoic. But I feel like a lot of the movie is about how you're supposed to look at the world and comparing how the different characters decide they're going to approach this rather kind of mundane world. And I guess that's part of the, to me, the significance of it being in Patterson. Yes. It happens to be, you know, where William Carlos Williams and Ginsberg are from, so that's an excuse to have the poet thing. But it's also this really, I mean, can you get to a more American everyday city than Patterson, right?
No, probably not, no.
He's, yeah.
Well, I disagree with you guys just a little bit. I think he is likable. I understand what you're saying, where it's like he's kind of like a standoffish and kind of does his own thing and doesn't really worry about what other people are doing. But, I mean, from the movie, man, everybody that he comes in contact with, they kind of like him. When he goes into the bar, everybody knows him. The bartender who owns the bar really likes him. Both of the women that he meets him in the bar, they kind of say, hi, Patterson. Like, it just seems to me like everybody that runs into him likes him. The guys that he works with, they don't really talk and have conversations, but when they see him, they give him like a fist pound or shake his hand. The one guy who's like does all the checking in with the, I guess the morning routines of the bus, who always has all these problems. He seems to I don't know if like would be the right word, but it seems like he likes talking to Patterson about his problems.
Yeah.
So that makes him, you know, open a little bit, you know. And it's obvious that his girlfriend, I mean, loves him. So I don't know. I think the only person in the movie that really don't like him is a dog. I mean, if you really.
Yeah,
you really think about it, him and a dog, to me, in the entire film, are fighting for the affection of the woman. And it's
absolutely.
It's pretty interesting. The dog was awesome, I agree.
That's still the best performance by a dog ever.
Best dog.
He's
pretty adorable.
What's that about, I guess? I mean, that's important to talk about. Maybe we should get into that.
Yeah.
What is up with his relationship with his girlfriend, and why is he the dog competing with him? I mean, he seems pretty neglectful of his girlfriend for the most part.
I think that I would say that it's a weird thing, man, because his girl, they're both artists, obviously. I mean, even though he's, you know, does his thing, I mean, he's an artist, he writes poems, and he kind of, even though he doesn't really come out and say it or wants to have any attention thrown his way, I think he kind of looks at himself as an artist, but he doesn't want to show it in a weird way, you know? Like, he doesn't tell anybody that he writes poems and things like that, but, you know, he goes little spots by himself and he writes about the things he sees, the things he hears, his normal day. And his girlfriend is almost the complete opposite of him, because she's way out there. Like, she wants to do as many creative things as she possibly can within, like, a two-hour time span, you know? She's painting on shower curtains, she's painting on the wall, she's painting on her on her clothes, you know, she's doing so much crap. She's doing cupcakes, she wants to play the guitar. And I think for him it's I don't think that he neglects her or anything like that. I just think that for him he's so laid back and just wants to spend every day doing the exact same thing, kind of feeling I get from him. And she's more seems like adventurous. So it's almost like a clash with him. Like he kind of maybe he loves her, obviously, but I don't know if it's the right kind of love for him. I don't know. Like, if this movie went on for, like, another 2 hours, which would probably be murder for me, because it would be way too long. I can probably see them eventually breaking up, because she wants something from him that he doesn't want to give, and he wants something from her that he's afraid to tell her. You know, like, she wants him to be more of an artist and let the world hear his poems, and he wants her to kind of tone down everything she does, but he never tells her that, you know, so they're... I don't know, it's a weird relationship, but it was fun to see him.
But I think she wants to be his muse, right? But, I mean, she's definitely, like, doing that role, but he doesn't seem interested in having a muse in any sort of way.
He doesn't want to do any of that stuff.
I might go a little bit far, just, like, the last thing you said, I agree with some of the things you said, and shifting my understanding of his character, I appreciate some of it.
I was talking about.
But no. But there's one thought I had. It's like, I don't know if I would actually go so as far as to say like he wants to tone down her character. He kind of seems to me like this kind of like he just kind of is like reactionary. It's like or not reactionary. He's just like kind of just like lets it. Well, like he just kind of is like okay. Like I don't think he really necessarily knows. Sometimes I think that his character doesn't really have an opinion about any of that. Like it's not like it's below him. It's just like he doesn't really even he has almost like a disinterested response. You know what that means? Like being disinterested. He's like not interested. He's just like
he doesn't want to touch it.
I have a little different take on that, but David, do you want to say anything?
I'm confused now.
I just think it's all about, you know, the whole movie to me is about the rhythms of, you know, how we go through our patterns of our lives. And I think you see that the movie has a certain kind of rhythm to it. Some things happen, you know, every day. Some things happen every so often. And, you know, to me, I think he's, you know, a fairly likable person. I think he's just kind of in his own head, as perhaps a lot of artists are.
Yep.
So you see, you know, his process, but I think it's a fascinating portrait of a creative mind in a kind of, you know, menial routine lifestyle that I don't know if you've ever really seen like that on film.
No, I like that for sure. I agree. But I think what you're saying is more where I'm coming from, the way he's indifferent. It's not about, but it still doesn't make him likable to me. I think there is a lot in the movie about how people see the world, right? Because
yeah,
his sure. take of seeing the world is, the reason I think he's indifferent like that is he's trying to find the interesting things in a mundane world and use that as fuel for his writing.
I think he's fairly content.
I think he's a people watcher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you see the other people, like you talked about the guy at work, that guy likes to complain about things.
Yep.
His way of using the world is, and he enjoys it. He enjoys complaining about things, right? And that's his way of dealing with the world. His girlfriend is maybe a little bit different how she does the world. She's maybe more actively creative in some sense. I mean, I think he's funny as a poet because it's almost all just consuming something and turning it into a poem.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah, okay, so let's talk a little bit about like the use of poetry in the movie. I'm really curious as to like the way it started at the beginning. It kind of like eased us into it and kind of like introduced this sort of process in which they presented the poem as this like live thought thing, but then they gave you a little bit of it and then they brought you back to it again with a little more and then they brought it back to you again with even a little more, you know. But it was like, for me, it was like, what was it trying to do? Was it in the mind of the audience? Was it trying to get you to get into his mind and the way that he was writing it and the way that he repeats it? Because I know that Williams and Wallace Stevens were very into like the rhythm and cadence of the walk and like the beats of the steps of the patterning of the walking. And a lot of that happened during when he was walking, you know? Like,
oh yeah, that's definitely by design.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
yeah.
why you have that constant walk back and forth between
right.
work and bus depot. And I mean, between home and the bus
depot
and to the bar. And,
the only place he doesn't walk is when he's driving the bus and when they go on their date. Other than that, he walks everywhere, and that's usually where he gets into his own head, where he's thinking about stuff. The poetry in it, I would say, the best, just to put it on my own terms, the best poem in the entire movie for me was the one the little girl wrote. I loved the poem that she had wrote to him and said, which was an awkward meeting for me. Because it's just
a strange moment.
Yeah, the little girl's sitting there, and he's like, "Hey, what are you doing here? Can I join you?" I mean, it's very weird.
But I think he was trying to be protective as well.
No,
too.
I get it, but it's weird. I understand that he was being protective. It doesn't matter. But he's not a serial do anything. He had good intentions. But I liked her poem, and I feel like in the movie, it really resonated with him because I felt like when he heard her poem, he was like, this little girl's shit is better than mine. You know,
yeah.
And like in my mind,
yeah.
he thought he
I
was
think
like,
you're
wow.
supposed to think that.
Yeah,
yeah.
He was like, this is amazing coming from this little girl. And, you know, the poems I do are kind of just about whatever. And she's like writing really, really great, you know, stuff. So I don't know. But it was really good. It was even good enough to where he recited a few words back to his girlfriend. But yeah, I don't know. Because I'm not really a huge Pawn guy, I'll be honest. So it didn't really resonate with me as much as other stuff did. Like, I was more focused on, you know, the visual language of the movie. But I thought it was interesting. I've never seen words and poems like played out in a movie like this before, where it's like, you know, literally somebody, I mean, I've seen writing in films, but it's like, you know, he will start writing something as he's thinking about it, then he'll get interrupted, then he'll come back to it later on in another scene, and he'll try to finish it. But I
love how that's handled in the
movie.
Yeah,
I did too. I thought it was interesting. I've never seen it.
You guys, apologies for this.
Well, I know. Of course, now they decide to. Right.
Yeah, for the record, we are broadcasting from Site 8, which is David's place, and he has neighbors that are very loud. So if you guys hear like D'Angelo in the background or something saying, it's not from us, it's from the neighbors.
I wish it was D'Angelo.
It's from the neighbors.
Did you guys find that was it all analogous to any writing process that you've ever?
Yeah,
of course.
Ask you guys as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of what I really liked about the. It is getting into his head, but the interruptedness of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't feel awkward. It didn't feel like a device. It felt very natural, and it was good. And even I think so much as the choice of the font, which could be of the words on the screen, which could be really distracting and could be, especially trying to be handwriting something.
It looked
like
it was exact for his handwriting.
Yeah.
From what we saw of his actual writing, it matched the words, like the title font, so that's pretty interesting.
And I liked that repetition, which I think a lot of movies, if they're trying to treat literature, would be afraid that that's going to lose the audience to repeat something that much, but it actually makes the poetry much more central to the movie than I think it otherwise would be.
So, you guys want to continue talking about the poetry?
Well, I have one other thing I wanted to say about
the poetry.
Yeah.
I have a few things. Yeah,
yeah, go ahead.
But yeah, go ahead, Magos.
Well, you know, I'm really okay. Like it is super simple, you know,
the poetry.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
But
and I kind of think
for a very specific reason, isn't it?
I think it makes it. I think it actually makes it, like, number one, it makes it incredibly digestible.
But it's also because it's Patterson, and even though they didn't really make it a central point. In fact, I missed it the first time I watched the movie. When he runs into the rapper at the laundromat, before the guy starts rapping, he says the famous WCW line, no ideas but in things.
Yep.
And that's the whole philosophy of the way poetry is in the movie, right?
Yeah.
Which also makes sense because of the connection to filmmaking, of course. And especially the way Jarmusch does filmmaking. I think that's probably something that spoke to him about the idea of doing a movie about poetry, right? The parallels of those things.
Right.
I just thought it was cool, just really quick, that they actually had somebody rapping in the movie, because rap is poetry, so it's kind of cool that they had an actual guy rapping. And, you know, I don't remember exactly what he was saying, but it came out fluid and really cool, and you can see him put it together, or hear him put it together in the laundromat. I thought that was pretty interesting for him to add that, because it's another form of poetry.
But there's also this, like, weird exoticism, too, which sort of comes through because he's in a laundromat. Like, the last place you would expect to see a rapper.
Right, and also it's Method Man, so it's like, as soon as you hear that voice, you're like, I know this fucking guy. Like, it's Method Man, obviously. But it was pretty fun, though. It was a cool little cameo from him.
Well, it was the hip-hop, you know, and Wu-Tang part of the Jarmusch canon, I think.
There's that reference.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, I think there's that whole idea of, and it is a very specific kind of poetry, which isn't the only kind of poetry, but it's very much that Williams, Carlos Williams, no ideas but in things. Everything's very concrete and pulling things out of the world, which I think for a poet watching it maybe can feel a little bit limiting, but I also really like how it was handled. I think it's handled well, and I think for someone who doesn't, I mean, most people haven't read that kind of poetry, right?
Right.
And I think it's presented in kind of a good way. I would think, like, the matches poem in the beginning. That's great. And part of it is because it's really demonstrating how this physical thing. It's like, oh, he's just writing about this matchbook in his kitchen, but he's really writing about his relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's just very concrete, easy for someone to grasp that. But it is, it does, it still has, it's not the most amazing poem in the world, but it's a powerful little poem in its way. And it's, you know, it's good.
They came back to it and kept using it as a texture over different scenes. And I like that. I think it started, for me, like, the start of it was, like, a little bit, it kind of had to sell me after a while. Like, when I first, when that whole, when it first got introduced, it was, like, a little bit much. It was a little repetitive, or it was, like, a little bit.
Same with me.
It was a little bit, like, okay, they need to keep repeating this again and again, and then, but then, like, we forgot about it for a little while, and it came back in again, and I was, like, oh, okay. Like, it hit me again, like, and it hit me at that point in a good way, you know? Yeah, I mean, I did, like, he had these Coleridge kind of Kubla Khan moments where it was, like, being interrupted and, like, having to cut off the poem. And I kind of liked that. It caused a little tension because I kind of felt like the poems would keep going on a little bit if he had more time. But then, like, the bus driver, the guy would knock on the door of the bus and interrupt him, or his girlfriend kept interrupting him a bunch of times, you know? So, like, that, I like that interruption thing kind of caught tension. It was, like, tension, you know?
Right.
And that worked for me. Like, I thought that was successful about it. I didn't see the dog eating the book. I didn't see that coming.
But yeah, that dog ripped that book to shreds.
What the hell is his relationship to his poetry, though? Because I can understand him not wanting to put it in the world on some level.
But I think it meant a lot to him. I feel like his life was very, not a book isn't the right term, but it was more like repetitive. Like, every day he kind of did the exact same thing. So I feel like his only outlet besides going to work and coming home and walking his dog, going to the bar, was almost the only thing he did that was a little different was writing his poems. And even though they were, you know, it was still poems, it was always about something a little different or weird, something that he came up with. So I feel like, I think it meant a lot to him. And I think when the dog ripped the book to shreds, he felt kind of two ways. One way he felt terrible because the book was gone, all his poems was gone. But another way, he probably felt bad because if he just made a copy of it a while ago, like his girlfriend asked him to do, he'd have had a backup, so he'd have been fine. So he was feeling kind of like pissed off at the dog, but maybe a little pissed off at himself. And I think when he meets spoilers for the film, when he meets late in the podcast with that.
I think that's obvious when you're doing a review.
Right, exactly. Yeah, when he meets the guy from Osaka, and which was a great.
Oh, yeah.
Weird, beautiful little scene. I feel like the movie actually should have ended right after that. I felt like when he's talking to that guy and he finds out he's a poet, and also I thought at the end that guy was going to walk away. He was going to walk up to another twin of himself because there were so many. And I still understand what the twin thing was about because he kept running into people that was twins. There was at least five or six different cases. And I was like, at the end, this thing probably is going to turn around and reveal itself, but it's Jim Jarmusch and it didn't reveal itself at all. But yeah, I thought at the end, like, the guy was going to walk away and he was going to run right into his twin and then they were going to walk away together and I was going to be like, okay, now the movie can end. But that's not how it ended.
Well, without his book of poetry, he didn't even claim being a poet anymore.
So yeah, exactly. Like,
he gave it away.
Would he have ever claimed being a poet, though? I think that's part of why I'm asking about his relationship to poetry, because it does seem so personal. And I do think you're right. I'm sure he was upset that his poems were gone, but I don't think he ever intended to get those poems copied.
I don't think so either. I don't think he really wants anybody to read them.
It's
kind of like his little home, you know what I mean? Like, inside that book, and whenever he opens it, he feels good. He's at peace, basically, because his voice is always, when he's in his head and he's writing, his voice is always calm. He's always, you know, a little happy to be writing. And then when he gets stopped from writing, you know, he's back to the real world. So I feel like his poetry was kind of like an outlet for him. And when the book left, you can always continue writing poetry, but I guess he had been writing. I don't know how long he had been writing, but it seemed like he had been doing it for a while. And he had some good stuff in there, you know, so.
It's a secret notebook.
Yeah, it is a secret notebook.
But then the girl shared her secret notebook with him.
She did.
Yeah.
And he shares it with his lover, obviously. But
I
think part of it is also, that's the thing is, the relationship is that it's hard for him to want to take his own art seriously when it's hard maybe to take the artistic pursuits of his lover seriously. And so in an effort to maybe not want to poo-poo And he's obviously encouraging, but you can tell he's also not entirely. It's a little patronizing the way that he, you know, he likes
oh,
her.
Oh, very patronizing.
He likes,
yeah.
Her, he likes her food. He likes her this. He likes whatever. So I think he, in a way to kind of balance that out, he doesn't take his own art
but
seriously.
That's part of what I don't like about his character, I guess, because he's so self-serious. And part of what's more interesting about her in some ways is she's not. And it's like, oh, let's just try some. I think my favorite thing is when, you know, all the stuff she puts in his lunch, he drew the eyeballs over the orange peel.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that. I didn't see that this time.
And it's like, but that's, you know, his whole thing, his poems are pulling these things out of the regular world. And I think that's what the twins thing is supposed to be about, really. It's supposed to be about, oh, look, he's noticing this magical thing in the everyday world where everyone else doesn't even seem to pay any attention to that. These twins keep reappearing everywhere.
I wish I'd have done something more with it, though. Like this, I mean, well, I'll get to my thoughts about the movie as a whole, but I wish I'd have done more with the twin thing because I really thought it was interesting, and it just, I knew what to expect from a drummer's film, but yeah. I feel like he should have ended it with something with the twins, and it's just there, and that's fine. But why? You know, I mean, I get it. If it's for Patterson to notice, you know, this weird thing going on where he's noticing twins everywhere and nobody else is noticing it, then I feel like something should have happened that should have meant something else. I don't know. That's just my feelings about.
Yeah, but I think that's Jarmusch, because I think what Jarmusch is actually saying there is exactly. That Patterson and Patterson are twins.
Well, there's that too, obviously. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I definitely see that. They're the sins.
Yeah. They're the twins. Right, I get that. I mean, even with that idea, I just feel like at some point in the film, Patterson seeing the twins, it should have been. I like things to come around full circle. I don't like movies to kind of just give you stuff and then let it go. Everything doesn't have to be answered, but something like that, I feel like is just so blatant that there should be an answer to it somehow. And if the answer is, well, you know, Patterson is, you know, a twin of where he stays, which is Patterson, and that's cool, but it's not the same. Like, it's something, I don't know. In the hands of another filmmaker, he might have done it, but it doesn't take away from the film. It's just...
It feels a little loose-endy, but...
Little things like that are what makes me, with this movie, I like it a lot. Like, it draws you into a zone, kind of, when you're watching it, and that's kind of why the first time I saw it, I fell asleep, was a little tired, and you can't be tired watching this movie because you'll just run right. You'll forget about it. But it does have, like you guys said earlier, a rhythm to it. So when you're watching, it kind of pulls you in. There's funny moments. There's a lot of everything's repetitive. He wakes up every day. The camera angle is exactly the same. Sometimes his watch is a little over the time he's supposed to wake up. Sometimes it's not. So there's little things in there. But I feel like there's a... I don't like the way it ended, man. I just really don't.
So you said that too, David.
It just ended with nothing.
Well, I want to hear both of your takes on why you didn't like the ending.
It's
been
that great. It could have ended in the park, but it ends with him getting up because he's getting up every day. So it ends with him getting up because it's another day.
You know,
which as the movie said, every. You
know. I changed my mind about that at the end. In fact,
you love it.
I have a question. which did not even cross my mind the first time I saw it. Okay, but what does the Japanese guy tell him when he gives him the notebook?
He says it's a gift, right?
He says it's a gift, and he says, sometimes a blank page...
Is
a fresh start.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if he's leaving her at the end of the movie.
Well, I think that's... Yeah, I think that's...
If that is the ending, or if that would have been
it's very
ending,
subtle and not
that
clear.
That
would
have been interesting. And at least that would have been an ending. Like, if he would have... That would have been interesting if that would have happened. I can't say that because we don't know if that happened or not. It's way too open ended to take that idea because I don't get that at all from it. But I can see it happening. Obviously, the next frame could be him putting his clothes on and walking the door.
I don't know why. The first time I saw it, I didn't even have the slightest thought of that. But this time, I was like, maybe that's. We're supposed to figure that out or something.
I think he gets the notebook. He realizes, you know, he kind of gets over the trauma of losing. I mean, honestly, in addition to a movie, celebrating, you know, creativity versus mediality, like, I don't know if you guys have ever lost a fucking notebook like that. Like,
of course,
it's fucking devastating.
I've lost hard drives.
I've lost,
it's devastating.
Feels terrible. Hell yeah.
So I think the Japanese character is about him getting over the. the devastation of the notebook. He's got a new notebook. He can't be a poet. The Japanese guy points out all the poetic aspects of his life that he's surely aware of, but at the same time, and I think it's more about, you know, just getting back. I think the guy's like a creature of habit. You know, he's a creature of cycles, so he's going to start over again. He's got a new notebook, a new page. He's going to get up out of the bed and go to...
Well, yeah, that's definitely true, no matter what. But the Japanese guy is also kind of like a poetry superhero coming in, right? He's poetry
Obi-Wan.
He's published, but he's still down to earth. He's not making a big deal out of it. He doesn't mention that right away.
How do we know that he's published?
Because he says his book.
He said that he has like a bunch of poetry books, right?
Yeah.
Because he said that he's written like five or six of them at some point, I think.
But they're only in Japanese.
Yeah. And he said he doesn't want to translate them because that'll be bad or...
No, he had a line.
Yeah, he had a line. He said it's like something...
Well, I understood that he had written poetry, but I didn't understand that he was a publisher.
Maybe he didn't specifically say
he published. Definitely says
but
that.
But some reason, I got that vibe that he had written.
He definitely says
like,
that.
I got the vibe that he was a big-time writer. That he came down to Patterson because he loves poetry and he wanted to visit this place where these great poets had lived. So I don't know. You just can tell from like he was dressed in like a really nice suit, wandering. I don't know. It just seemed like he was.
But he got off the mystery train.
Well, yeah, it could be.
But all right. So I guess one of the things I would like to talk about is we talk about a lot of stuff is like some of the cinematic stuff in the films as far as like the way it looks and. The way it was shot, the way it's edited, the slow pace of it. I'm a fan of all of that stuff. Anybody who's seen any of Big Jimmy's other films would, you know, be used to this because that's exactly the way he shoots them. He likes wide shots, he likes single takes, and he likes people doing stuff in frames, and it's really interesting. This movie was shot really well. I love the way it looks. It has a very... not warm palette, but like it's almost like pastels. Like it's kind of undersaturated. It's a weird palette, but it looks really cool. And I love where he works at because with all of the brick buildings and when he's walking around from to his job or from his job and he's walking through all these tunnels and stuff and it's everything's just brick and brick and brick. I thought that was really cool.
It's genius having the girlfriend be into black and white because then you get that contrast between when they're in the apartment and when he's out in the world. It's wonderful for a color film.
It's really great, and I love everything that takes place in the bar. The bar was great.
Oh, man, I wish that was my bar.
Right, me too, man. I love it. Like, the music they was playing, like, that's a fucking bar I want to go to. But the actor who owned the bar, I can't remember exactly what that guy's name is, but he's amazing in everything he's in. I remember him in Collateral. He's a big Michael Mann guy, which David would have. He was in Collateral in a great scene, and he's also really great in Miami Vice, and that guy's just a great actor. And he was great in this. Almost playing the same character from Collateral, if you really think about it. But it was great, man. I liked the... everybody he interacted with that he met. Just like I said, like earlier we were talking about he wasn't likable, and I just think he was likable by people who didn't really know him. The only person that really, really knew him was his girlfriend. But everybody else kind of just had this, we meet him at a bar.
Yeah.
He drinks, he's quiet, that's it. We meet him at work, he comes there, he writes in his book, and he goes. So, I don't know, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking maybe he was just likable because they didn't really know who he really was.
Well, and he listened to them.
Yes,
or pretended to, at least.
Exactly. Because
he was really just going to put in a poem later. But
he's just using everybody, you know, for his own. This is all personal game, basically. It was interesting.
To me, it definitely was, you know, it showed the world looked very mundane, but it was also, you could see the beauty in it, you know, the way that it was shot. So it lended itself to his ruminations and poetry because it did not, you know, it wasn't, you know, lovingly lit everything, but at the same time there was simple beauty in a lot of mundane things in his, you know, environment. So
my absolute favorite shot.
I have a favorite shot too.
There at some point he and the girlfriend are lying in bed and there's just this brief cutaway where the shot is overhead looking at them, but there's a brief cutaway of point of view looking up, and all it is a piece of park curtain and part of the windowsill. And it's just really brief, but it's wonderful.
I remember that shot.
I think my favorite shot, I probably just said it while we were watching, was when he's down in the basement and he's writing, and the camera angle is we only see his reflection in the mirror, and his girlfriend comes up from behind him.
Oh yeah.
And like reaches in to grab his shoulder, and it's just her hand, and then her face comes in. It's just such a weird, that's a crazy shot. And it's so easy to do, but it's just really cool, man. I was like, wow, that's that, just that shot alone kind of blew me away. I was like, man, I can.
Yeah, that's a good shot.
I need some more shots of them in this film, man. Like, that was awesome. It's like he got lucky with that one frame, and he was like, here we go, and then he didn't do
it
anymore.
But it's great, because that's part of what's great about Jarmusch in general, because he doesn't go crazy with it. It's not that flashy, but yeah, there are moments where you're like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah, like, that without a doubt is probably, that's the most flashiest camera angle in the entire film. Because everything else is very straight on. It's either looking down at them or looking up or looking straight on. So that was very, very cool and a cool shot. But I love the way it's shot. I think it's a like I said, it's a great looking film. At some moments, I don't know if it's because David's TV is so great, but there's some moments where a frame would be up and I was like, man, you can really touch that. Like, you know, it's always shot really well. And there wasn't much of a score, but the score that was there was actually really good. Soundtrack was basically music that was playing in the bar was really good. I mean, overall, it's a well-made film. I enjoyed it. I don't think I'll ever have to watch it again. I hate saying that, but some movies like that, like I don't, like if, maybe if it's on TV and I have like an hour and a half to spare and I'm bored, but watch it. But it's not the type of movie that I would want to watch to just keep on getting stuff from, because it's not, I don't know, there wasn't that much there. I mean, even though we can talk about it and break things down, there wasn't that much there for me to want to just keep rewatching and rewatch, try to pick up pieces from it.
I didn't notice the dog, every time they mess with the mailbox this time, they would cut to the dog.
Yeah.
Before, like, even knowing that, yeah, that the dog was responsible.
What the hell is up with that? Like, that kind of blew my mind, because before it happened, I was like, what is up with this fucking mailbox? Why every time he's coming home, it's over? And it's cool, and also doesn't make sense to me that the dog every day is pushing the mailbox over as like to spite him.
It's territorial. Is it spite the dog?
Yeah, but why every day is the door staying open just long enough for the dog to run out? Well, knock the mailbox over, then the door closes behind him. The girlfriend in on it every time?
That scene was
it's like a throwaway comedy bit. Yeah. And I get that. That's great, but in a movie that's supposed to,
I liked it. I laughed.
I like it too, and I don't think it's a throwaway comedy bit.
I'm not saying I don't like it. Just when I'm thinking about the logistics of it, just doesn't make sense.
There's things like that, like in everyday life. That,
well, yeah.
You have a dog that every day goes out. There's
a tricky some little weird thing or something that you just can't ever figure out, and you know, it's hilarious to see that there might actually be somebody behind one of those.
And it does make sense to me, because the girlfriend's kind of ditzy. I think she's just leaving the door
every day
open.
She leaves the door open,
and he and like dog's
and then
going
the dog
out.
Closes it. That makes no sense.
But I also think it's, you know, because the dog is like,
you're thinking too hard about
the dog
it.
Is kind of malevolent too,
right?
Watch
like, the movie that we just watched. You're supposed to think hard about it.
I think the dog's just, it's a little evil bastard. About
he's,
his,
he wants that girl all to himself.
All to himself, and he's growling.
It was. I mean, I'm not. I like the scene. It just doesn't fit everything else that goes on in the movie. I'm sorry, it doesn't.
You were waiting.
Maybe if they had like an actual dog door on the door, and every day he went through the dog door and knocked the mailbox over and came back in. But it really, I'm sorry, but it really bugs me that every single day the dog runs out, pushes the mailbox over, then comes back in and closes the door. That makes no sense.
You guys are all waiting for that dog to get jacked too, weren't you?
I was really hoping that there was going to be a scene, because that did create a lot of that created an interesting tension.
Yeah,
that like we would see the guy, he's like, you know, that the jacking the scene there. What kind of car was he
driving? The white guy, black guys who were driving Toyota.
And then next thing you know, you just like see the dog like tied up out front to like the pipe, you know, it's like sitting there like waiting. Could have gotten jacked.
I don't think the dog likes being left outside of the bar every day.
Right. He Patterson wanted the dog to get jacked.
It almost seemed like the kind of bar that would let you bring that dog.
Probably would have.
Yeah, I think that bar would totally let him bring that dog in. I mean, why not? He would seem like he's a regular. Right. It was totally a laid-back bar.
But he didn't want to be. That was his time away from the dog.
Yes. Yeah. I was just about to say that. I feel like he liked leaving the dog outside because obviously he didn't like the dog that much. The dog didn't like him. They kind of hated each other. But that was his way of telling the dog, basically, you know, screw you. I'm going, when I'm taking you off for a walk, I'm going to go to the bar and leave you outside. If you get jacked, it's okay. I'll explain it somehow. If not, hey, I'm inside drinking a beer and I have a good time.
I find it funny that the only time he can get away from the dog is when he takes the dog out.
Yeah.
To then tie it up and then get away from the dog.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like the only time that he has away from the dog. And it's,
it was fun. I mean, the dog was cool. I like the dog a lot. I loved how, because they made sure every time that Patterson and his girlfriend, which I don't remember her
Laura.
Name.
I don't know if they ever say her name. Yeah, I was trying to remember them but saying her name. She says the thing about Petrarch, and she says, and guess what?
Her name is Laura.
Her name is Laura. That's the only way I think you
put I like how every time like they would kiss or show some type of affection, the dog would just like growl, and they would cut to him like looking with this weird look, like, what are you doing to my woman? You know, like, that was very funny. But it was cool, man. I mean, the movie's good. It's interesting. I mean,
it got a little underrated, I think,
it's a fun
movie. I mean, well, there was talk about him getting nominated, but he never did.
With Adam Driver?
Yeah, I think he got nominated maybe for some of the lesser categories and things, but it didn't really lead to any momentum. And I just feel like the movie was, you know, probably underseen.
I mean, I wouldn't nominate him for anything for Best Actor. I mean, he did a good job of what he had, but it's not the type of performance that says, like, man, you really gave your all for this movie. And he did. I'm not saying that it was bad. He did a great. I like Adam Driver a lot. He's this certain type of weird looking, but good looking, mellow, but kind of can snap at any moment kind of guy. I like that about him. I also watch Girls, so I'm one of those weird dudes who like the show's Girls. And he's awesome on that thing. So, and he's also Kylo Ren, so how could you not like him?
I mean, I think he worked really well for this character.
No, I thought he was great in the movie. He did good.
I don't know if I can credit that much to his acting.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, he did great with what he had, but I wouldn't be like, man, you guys got to watch this movie to go see what Adam Driver does. No, it would just be like, I actually like his girlfriend in the movie more than him, because I feel like her character was more, she had more things to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, I love the throwaway shots of, I don't say throwaway shots, but just add weird shots of just her trying on clothes in the mirror, and she's wrapping things around her head, and she's trying all these different weird outfits, and she's painting on herself as she's wearing a dress. That's so strange. And I would actually like to get a movie about her, you know, that's not about Patterson.
What does she represent, though, in this movie? Because I feel like I want to talk about her for a little bit.
I think she represents
her yet.
A little bit, but not too much. Yeah.
Okay. So, like, what does she represent in this movie? Because what's the whole thing about her, like, being like, oh, my dream to be this guitar player, and my dream to be the muffin maker and cupcake maker, and then my dream for, you know. So she's like the one who has all these like dreams. And what's up with like the idea of like, oh, thank you, baby, for the gift I'm giving to myself that you're giving me.
That was a little.
What's
strange.
Up with that?
Because she's the opposite of Patterson.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's finding the wondrous in the everyday world. She's escaping the everyday world by creating a fantasy world.
Right. Yeah, and I also think just to put it in layman's terms, there are two different types of artists. There's the one artist that's the troubled artist that's trying to find their way and don't really want people to see their art, and they rather like hold it back, and they're kind of not ashamed of it, but they don't really want to show it to people. And there's the other artists that are like really bombastic, and they like, you know, they want everybody to see it, and they want to help everybody, and they're like, hey, you over there on the street, come over here, let me paint a dress for you because I want to give it to you. You know, like, that's the type of chick she was. And I think just simply, we can look into it way, way, way deeper, but I just feel like simply they were just two different types of artists who happened to meet each other, and they had two different ideologies about the way they like to be artists. You know, like, she's very creative and likes doing a lot of things and not knowing exactly what she wants to do. That's why she tries so many different things. I know tons of people like that. I'm one of those people. And Patterson is more of the guy where it's like, I kind of know what I like doing. I write poems.
Right.
That's it. I don't want to do anything else. I like writing poems. I like coming home to my girl, you know, riding my bus.
Going to the same bar every day.
Getting a drink every day at the bar. Done. So it's just, you know, it's kind of like somebody is very outgoing, don't know what they want, and somebody is in and know what they want. So it's just the complete opposite.
But in the mythography of the movie, it's kind of weird, right? Because the whole movie is about no ideas but in things. And she's the exact opposite of that. She's about the ideas that aren't in things, right? She's literally taking the things
she's
in the
great,
house
great stuff on
and
black.
Turning them into this black and white thing that she has, right? Mm-hmm. She's not... So in that sense, it's almost critical of her in some way, but I end up liking her a little more But it almost seems like in some way, intentionally or not, the movie is being a little bit critical of her because she's the artificial side of art, which in this movie is somewhat shown as being negative, right? I don't agree with that, but in this movie it's kind of like, oh, art is supposed to be understated and natural and rooted in the world around you.
Yep.
And she's the opposite of that.
But she represents this like whimsical but like stereotypical, like she represents these different
Well, she things. Is the stereotypical muse all the way.
She's,
you know?
She's Michael Bay and a passion is Jim Jarmusch, you know, like it's just that's the two spectrums they're on, you know. It's like somebody's way out there and do a lot of different things and are crazy. The other one's more understated and make personal films. I mean, it's basically he's just kind of trying to say that he doesn't like people that are like that. That's kind of the feeling I got from it. Like I feel like even though she's a very lovable person in my opinion, I feel like John was trying to say that what she's trying to do isn't right, you know, and what Passion is doing is the way it's supposed to be done, even though he's not succeeding at what he's doing, you know, like he's always going to be a bus driver and never show anybody his work, but his work means more because it's understated, you know what I mean? Like what she's doing, and just think about it, like if we really think about all the stuff that she did in that apartment, she's a hell of an artist, man.
Yeah.
Like they make fun of it in a movie, but the curtains that she made.
Well, sort of make fun of it, but awesome. Then, it is pretty amazing when you actually see the stuff. And you're like, okay.
Everything that she's creating, and basically everything in the apartment is stuff that she's done. She's drew paintings of the dog. She's drawn, she's painted all the walls in the house, and she's drawn curtains. She's made a rug, and she is just, I'm like, man, she's freaking talented, dude. Like, he should be lucky to have her. That's the way I feel.
But maybe we are supposed to come to a little bit of a more moderate place at the end, because I feel like the Japanese poet is a little less extreme than Patterson is with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
He is okay. He's left his home to come to Patterson and see this thing. He is seeing this other world. He's dressed nice.
Yeah.
He's more sophisticated.
He's likening himself to William Carlos Williams because he's basically saying like, well, I'm in Patterson. My name's Patterson. I'm this embodiment of Patterson. But like William Carlos Williams, I wasn't a poet. Like William Carlos Williams is like a. I said it perfectly the first time. I wonder if we got it, but
he's a doctor.
He's
all right, so
yeah, he's that. A doctor. So he's like saying like, well, you don't need to be a poet,
right?
You know. But this guy was like a poet's poet. He was like an actual poet, you know, as opposed to. So I think that's an interesting. I think that was like an interesting meeting there. This like meeting of like this poet versus like a poet. But he said he wasn't a poet. He denied his poetry. Like he almost he's like not a witness for poetry. Like Patterson at that point, I kind of like fell out of love with Patterson when he rejected his poet state. You know, but maybe at that point, that was like the lowest of the low point for Patterson.
Yeah.
He was low, you know, and he wasn't feeling like a poet in that moment when he was like meeting this other poet.
Right. And I think he kind of has that sort of humility anyway. I don't know if he ever would have said.
He did it when he met the little girl. Like
he did.
Because at first he felt like, because he did, I think, tell her that he was a poet.
But I don't think he referred to himself as did. A poet. I think he said that he
does poetry.
Poems.
Right, that's true. But I think
all this nomenclature is important in his head.
Did he even say that? I think she said, "Are you interested in poetry?" And
yeah,
he said,
"Very much."
So. And he said, "Oh yes, definitely." I don't even think he said he was a poet in that situation.
But I feel like in that, because that's a really, I think for some reason, that's a weird, really important scene in the film, because I think when he first meets little girl, he's kind of like, she's a little girl, you know, I'm going to try to stay here until mom come and help her out. And when he finds out that she writes poetry, he's kind of like, oh, cool. I mean, he didn't say he was a poet, but I feel like in his mind, he's like, oh, that's cute. She thinks she writes poetry, kind of like me, and I'm a grown-up. And then when he actually hears what she writes, and in his head, because you even see in his eyes, there's a good shot of him listening to her read her little poem, and you can just see on his face, he was like, wow, she's really good. So I think, like, at that moment, he was like, in his head, this girl might be better at this than I am, you know? Like, am I a real poet? You know, I don't know. Like, I feel like...
Yeah, but I do think
that's
there's
kind of what he was thinking.
You're right, there's an important parallel there, too, with the end thing with the Japanese poet, because I think, you're right, he's sitting there thinking, like, I'm going to be a good guy advancing poetry in this world, listening to this little girl's poetry, and then he's like, oh, whoa.
Right, she's better than me.
Yeah, she's really good.
So like I said earlier, that poem she wrote was really good.
And I think he almost kind of does the same thing in a different way with the Japanese guy, mm-hmm. and he's like, oh, I'm going to be humble, and here's this guy interested in poetry, and I'm not even going to tell him.
Right, right.
Then I'm not even going to tell him that I like poetry.
Again, that this guy, even though we didn't hear any of his poetry, he's probably better at poetry than Patterson is, because he's written 5 or 6 poet books by now. So it's pretty interesting, man. Like I would have liked to, like I said, the ending just didn't land with me, and I felt like they missed something. With it. We've already talked about it, I'm not gonna repeat it, but it just seems like everything didn't come full circle to me, even though visually it did, because we start on the wide shot over the bed of them waking up and we end on that. But everything had come full circle. I feel like everything that he was doing was left open-ended, and I feel like we should have closed a chapter.
Yeah,
somehow. I mean, just one chapter. You know, like,
that's similar what's to up with him and his girlfriend? Problem with the movie.
Yeah.
And I like a lot of things about it, and I actually like it better the second time than I did before. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of good pattern building, both visually and thematically, that's really nice, and it's interesting, and that sort of keeps me going. But I feel like, in a way, I mean, Jarmusch movies are always slow-paced, yes. And there's not a lot happening in general. Right. But there's usually some wheel pushing things forward, and there's no wheel in this movie.
Yeah.
There's nothing taking you from the beginning to the end in any sort of way.
The dog. That's it.
But that's not enough for me.
But that's the
Yeah, I agree. There's really, I mean, I hate to say nothing happens because that's not true. Obviously, stuff happens, but there's nothing... There's no drama in the movie, and I mean, and I hate to say that you have to have drama in a film. That's the way movies work, but you have to have a beginning, a middle, and an end for a film for it to land with people. And I feel like this movie has a beginning and a middle, but with no end. You know, and I mean, things happen, but nothing to me that's interesting except for when he meets the Japanese guy. And again, if the movie would have ended with him meeting him, that would have been a better ending than the ending they had. It still wouldn't have been full circle, in my opinion, but it would have been better because I felt like we at least had a closing.
But is there even a middle? Because I think part of the problem is not just that, and that may be why the ending doesn't bother me that much, because I just kind of feel this general malaise through the whole movie in some sense, because even though I like a lot of the thematic things, and there's enough repetition that's kind of interesting, they don't actually build on one another either. They just repeat without building.
Right.
There's no... upward motion in the movie
I agree. And I'm saying there's a middle because the movie, so I don't even know how long it is, but the movie seems really
long.
It's
2 hours, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm saying there's a middle because the movie's so long, you just watch a lot of it, so there has to be a middle. But yeah, you're right. Technically, there really isn't a middle. There's nothing that pushes the story forward. Everything that happens, it happens to somebody else. And the only thing that happens to him is that his book gets destroyed.
Which is maybe what bothers me a little bit about that part, because it feels like trying to force a climax into a movie that doesn't have...
Right.
You can't have a climax without some kind of rising action first, right? There's just... Right. All right, yeah. I
hate to be a stickler, but David knows I do this a lot when it comes to films. That damn book was shredded to pieces. it's ridiculous. Like, and I understand it. I mean, again, that's one of those weird things. I've had dogs before. I know that when dogs get things, they tear them up.
But not that much.
I mean, it literally looked like they put it in a shredder, then took the stuff out the shredder and sprayed it all on the floor, and that's the dog did.
And there would have been dog spit all over that stuff.
It would have been
bone dry.
Dogs don't do that. It would have been they would have had a lot of like full papers that have been there that may have had holes in them with tear, but it just wouldn't have been shredded. I don't know. It's a weird little thing, guys. But it's just stuff like that bothers me in movies when it can be easily fixed. But yeah, like I feel like the movie just doesn't have an end, man. And everything doesn't have to have an end. I don't want to be one of those guys, but I just feel like in this type of film, for it to land on me and for it to stick with me, you have to have an ending that I can be like, well, I went through all that for something. You know, it makes sense.
Yeah, so, I still like it a lot. I enjoyed watching it a second time. But I think that keeps it from being a really good movie in the end of things.
I agree 100%. I really liked it as well. And I thought everything in it was good. And it was, you know, some parts of it were fun. And all the actors were really good. It was shot well, but... I don't know. It's just nothing.
Happens. It should have ended right after the poet, when he meets the poet in the park, or something like
that.
Right,
I thought
a little
it
bit
was.
After that, just like a little.
But that wouldn't have made any difference,
like,
really. It still would have felt like that, I think, if you ended there.
Because I said this exact same thing. Like, I feel like when he meets the poet in the park, if the movie would have ended, if something would have happened right after he met him, like this, and I'm just gonna let you guys into my head really quick. So while we're watching that film, and he meets the guy, and they're talking, and I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. And the guy, what does he say? Something to him at the end when he walks away. And he looks at the tree. He kind of looks up at it. And like, I thought that he was going to like die. Like that's in my head. I'm serious.
Japanese guy?
Yeah, just go with it. Because nothing happens in this film at all. So I'm like, at the end, he just had this incredible conversation with this guy that's kind of opened him up about other poets and his poetry. This guy gives him a his own book again. He's back on page now. Now he can start writing again. And this wonderful, magical Obi-Wan, Yoda kind of guy walks away. And he just, because he has this moment where he looks up at the tree. Like, you guys remember it?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's just a random tree right there. And he looks up at it. And I was like, in my head, I was like, wait, this guy's about to like pass out and have a heart attack or something. And he just walks away. And then we cut to him in the bed with another overhead shot. New day, and the movie ends. I'm like, man, I thought something was gonna happen right there. And another, like I told you guys earlier, the other idea was that as he's walking away, his twin walks up next to him, and they both wave, and then he walk away. I was like, that'd have been pretty interesting.
Just CGI but, and a twin and some dog slobber and a doggy door, and you guys perfect movie, love man. This yeah. movie.
Perfect scene.
Well, movie. But I think at that point, I mean, I don't think that's my problem, though, because I don't think anything could have happened at that point in the movie that would have fixed what my problem is, because my problem is there's nothing driving the story at that point, and you can't just tack something on to do that. Like, that needed to be thought of earlier in the right. in the movie.
I want to talk to my good buddy David and find out, because I remember when he first watched this movie, and he told me he loved it. Like, he told me...
Yeah, so you've been silent. Let's hear your take here.
You've been kind of quiet, man. I want to know what do you love about it so much, because I'm just curious. I don't want to put you on the spot.
It's just a great examination of, you know, the rhythms of life while you're trying to keep your mind occupied.
Yeah.
Doing a menial job and, you know, I think, you know, it's rationalizing what you'd maybe like to be doing versus what you've got to be doing. You know, and I think a lot of conversations that I've had with some people in this room about that. And, you know, it's just, it really gets to, you know, finding peace with your lifestyle, your ambitions versus your, you know, kind of financial realities. I mean, the movie's very definitely, it's pretty much a completely, you know, blue collar kind of movie. There's not a lot of class discussion in the movie because it's all kind of set in one, you know, it's all set in one kind of blue collar class.
I do like that about the movie. And the two guys on the bus, like, even small things are about that, right? Because that's what that's about, too. The two guys talking about that girl came by, and what did you do?
They were lying about her.
I just talked to her by the door for a while.
It's funny, they both were lying to each other about meeting these women, because obviously it wasn't true.
That's inherent.
It was pretty funny. Yeah,
it's going to be blue-collar because it's the bus.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, it's part of that same thing like you're talking about figuring out your ambitions versus reality, and in a different sphere, but it's, I think that's also supposed to be kind of parallel on some level, right? Like, here's these guys, and they're like, oh, man, it'd be great if I had some hot lady. But then the reality, you know?
So they're not, well, I don't even know if the stories were completely bullshit, but I did like...
I think they were both bullshit.
They're both just, like, too worn down and just like, oh, well, you know, I had to get up early in the morning.
Yeah, I think they're both lying, because neither one of those stories are true.
Right.
There's no way the one guy, when he's talking about he met a beautiful woman... And she was totally down to get with him, but he was like, oh, I gotta wake up early, go to work in the morning. That's not a guy. He wouldn't have done that. He would have slept with her. But that's why I think they both, it was just funny because they were both lying to each other about hooking up with girls, but or not hooking up with girls in the same fashion. But what do you think about the ending, man? Because I haven't, now that we've both seen it.
No, I thought it was fine.
It
might have been stronger ending with just the Japanese guy leaving.
And it didn't affect the movie for you at all?
Well, if it had been gone on too long, I mean, it literally just goes on another 2 minutes, so I didn't really... I just sometimes get my hopes up that a movie should end at a very exact point. Didn't, but I think it's all just about his... He decides to get back on the saddle, and he realizes that he's enough of a poet through the validation he gets through the conversation with the Japanese man, and...
And then he leaves Laura.
No, he wakes up and gets on the bus and goes...
I don't know. I think he does.
He's going to be back at the waterfall later the day.
I like thinking that he left her. I like it a lot. And the movie would have been awesome if he would have left her at the end. Because that would have brought his character full circle.
The deleted scene of him digging a small grave for the dog.
But she was so awesome, man. She was beautiful. I loved every time they showed her. I wish the movie was about her. Like, I wish her name was Patterson.
Maybe he can make a sequel, and that'll be all about her.
I haven't even seen.
And Patterson will be gone.
I've never seen her anything else, but I hope she starts getting better other jobs. She was great.
I haven't seen all of his movies, but I feel like there's probably some Almodovar movies out there
that can cast her.
A crazy artistic woman or something.
Yeah, I agree. But no, she's awesome.
Well, is there anything else anyone wanted to add? I think we covered a lot of stuff
in there, yeah.
And thank y'all for joining us.
See it. It's worth it. It's a good watch.
It's a good watch.
you know, go into it with no expectations. And,
I mean,
if you're a Jarmusch fan, you'll like this one.
I think every Jarmusch movie, there's some I like better than others. Yes. But the other thing that I think we need to say, to be fair, is even the worst Jarmusch movie is 1,000 times better to watch than, you know, 99% of the movies you're going to watch.
Yeah, it's better than Power Rangers, guys, so definitely watch this over that.
I hope so.
But yeah, I mean, it's, even though I probably talked the most trash about the film, I still thought it was entertaining and fun, and I enjoyed it, actually. All the way through, there's little moments here and there that I do that with every film. I always pick point crap. But it's good. I think you guys should probably go out and check it out. It's on iTunes now, as far as I know. Buy the Blu-ray and sit back. Just don't watch it at 1:30 in the morning, because you would not get through it. I promise you won't. It's very slow paced. Make sure you're awake. Get you some coffee. Sit back. Don't have the AC on blast, because you might fall asleep because it's too cold. Just sit back, get your coffee, and enjoy yourselves and live up.
And if you're looking for a poetry movie, it's better than Naruto. Watch this first.
I haven't seen them.
All right, well, thank you all for joining us on the No Good Poetry Podcast.
And this will kick off another segment here where we're going to review some poetry movies and media pieces such as this. We might go take a step back into some other movies in the catalog.
In the next episode, we're going to be live from the New Orleans Poetry Festival. Well, not live, but we're going to be recording live at the New Orleans Poetry Festival. So look out for that. We're going to have a lot of great poets on in the coming episodes that we've recorded at this great festival here.
Indeed, including some visitors from out of town, which we're going to have a lot of them out there. So, see you next time.
Bye. Thanks, guys. When I'm feeling alone, can I talk?